Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
And welcome to yet another eco edition of Naked Soma. Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Man, I'll tell you, Eco Week just takes a lot out of you.
The last two times through the horns have been a little bit, you know, left a little flesh on the post.
Yeah, I think the horns were strategically placed the last couple of times around.
And I know basically we're only getting the dead and the near dead to listen tonight because American Idol is winding down.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll listen to the replay at some other point.
Yeah, the archiving fags that won't listen live.
Yeah, why won't you people listen live? You could call in and hang out with us.
They're watching American Idol. They're looking at internet porn. They're voting for Hillary. They're doing all kinds of things.
Well, that's going to come to a close pretty fast.
You know, speaking of that Geppetto-faced yambag Gianto, I can't stand it. I call her the evil weasel now because every time she makes a statement that the people clap for, she has this S-eating grin that starts at her forehead. It's like the Grinch. She's like, and I'll support the Democratic nominee, whoever she is. I made it funny. Oh, God. I almost threw the cat at the television this morning when I watched her do that.
Yeah, well.
I just have such, I don't know, it's like pent-up venom.
So I'm a loser, baby.
That's all I have to say to her.
Yeah, she needs to go. So I will do a river dance when she concedes.
That would be nice.
She's only going to concede with a whole bunch of freaking, pins and needles for Obama. That guy's going to be walking around crooked for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be nasty. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. The Mets are down by 5 in Atlanta as we go to the...
Is anything going right for you today? Just
no,
let me
I'm
know.
Telling you. The Mets are causing me, like the entire right side of my body basically is a rental today because the venom that has been surging up from the ascending colon to the gallbladder to the liver, across the transverse colon to the spleen, and now it's making that clubhouse turn to the descending colon as I watch the Mets go 3 straight down in Atlanta. They can't win down, they're 31 and 60 something. I think it was 64. And since that stupid stadium opened up, talk about the guy burying the program
the
in the Yankee Stadium. No, the guy first they found the shirt, then he said, oh no, by the way, I also buried a program. He buried like a million different things to make sure the stadium got cursed.
That's nice.
Yeah. The Yankees can't lose enough games. I mean, the last couple of weeks, they've been losing so many games. It's been like pornography every night to watch them lose. They're winning tonight 6-0, furthering my misery. So, so you got... Exactly, there you go, the Stankies, yeah. Thanks, Fitzy. Yeah. So, like I said, between the presidential, poo and all the local sports bringing out your dead. It's been just and again, whoever survived the Anto week last week, which was pretty turbulent.
It was nasty.
And that full moon on Monday night. I don't know if you saw it. I was up crowing at it. There's just a lot of spring in the air.
Mm-hmm.
If it hasn't been the temperature, it's been the emotions. So I think we're kind of We're on track having our particular guest tonight to lend a little credence to all this stuff and give us a break. Because I'm telling
that
you,
would be nice.
I need to go on a somatic vacation, as I will be discussing forthwith with the Soma Scopes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
We have a couple of new things going on tonight for us.
Mm. Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. We got to get to that. You're looking around. You got the Dancing with the Stars thing ended yesterday. Thank God. And what a surprise, the figure skater one. It's a stretch.
Yeah, I don't follow any of that stuff. I mean, it makes my colon just spin.
Your colon spins?
Well, yeah.
Then I'm running.
It's counterclockwise.
Well, the guy that lost, the football player that lost, he's now, you know, he's not going to go to Jason Taylor, he's keeping score at home. He's not going to go to any of the training camps, and he's holding out, and he wants to go into movies like The Rock.
Rock looks good, though.
So Bob Costas had this to say.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
Always funny, Bob Costas.
he's so upset that he's actually saying it. It's great.
Mm.
Oh, God, that's funny.
And he's quoting somebody else, which makes it even more pathetic.
It's good.
Oh, boy.
I could listen to that all day.
Hmm. So, again, you know, tonight we're going to be taking a little walk on the wild side and getting into some kind of borderline moo-woo situation with the subject of coherence, which confuses the average sape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the word coherence, they don't get.
They don't get that word, no. That's too complicated for you.
Very complicated word there.
Mm-hmm. Sanjaya, they get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the things that they do get, you're right. Give me a break.
They'll get that. They'll go to Wikipedia for that and figure that out. But, coherence is something that, I'm trying to think how far back upstream in the river of broken dreams I have to go to find it. But a couple of years ago, I was doing something called Casual Thursdays here at the office. And at the Soma Space, which at that point was the Yes Center,
mm-hmm.
then became the No Center. Goodbye. And we did these Casual Thursdays with the local Woo. And we were like, well, what do we all have in common? Because everybody was just one further, you know, example of Zulu Nation than the other. And the subject of coherence came up. So we said, okay, we could probably, you know, all agree on that. Hands of the Elephant. And everyone had different versions of the story, so we're going to be talking to someone that actually has created a science. I love that. Anytime it's a science. We got to get the guy on that does the stuff for those socks, the Thurlow socks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they use comfort science over there, Thurlow.
Of course they do.
Yeah, the cushioned heel and the venting between the toes and all that stuff.
Oh, I could use that at the gym.
Yeah. So you have... I don't know, a couple of years ago I gave that presentation out in Denver to the Chaos Woos, and there was about 15 or 20 different examples of, like, this comfort science, this coffee science, you know, relaxation science. You just put the word science in there, anything, and porn science, you know. And now they have this other thing called if you've seen it, the sports science show. I think there's another show called Fight Science, where they're actually doing an experiment of what happens to the human body when a man is kicked in the nads.
No.
Yes. It's probably on YouTube already. It's probably
on
YouTube already. It's on every Sunday night on Fox Sports Network. And basically they line a dude up who stands there with his hands on his hips like Superman, and they take one of those tennis ball machines, you know, that shoots the ball.
Oh.
And ready, aim, fire. And they have him hooked up to heart monitors and whatnot. And what a surprise, he goes in red lines as soon as he gets hit in the head.
Yeah, that's a big surprise.
Yeah, so there you go. There's your science for the night.
Wow.
Mad science. Yeah. Well, what a surprise. If you kick a guy in the balls, it hurts, and his heart spikes. Yeah. Let's publish a paper.
A judo. A judo. A judo.
There you go. Tremendous. All right, with
a
segue, would you like to play your advice this week for the Lovelorn?
Wait a minute. My screen just had a conniption. Hold on. All right, I have a little song that I'm going to start off with, though.
You're going to sing it or play it?
No, please. Hello.
Yeah, often you sing.
Yeah, not even in the shower. I think our guest just signed in. Should we wait?
No, do your thing first, then we'll do the interview.
All right, here we go.
All right, enjoy.
Girl, Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. Monday night is my night to cook. Tuesday night we go and visit your mother. But Wednesday we make sweet weekly love.
That's cool.
Hello, Professor Val here with a new segment for our show called Soma Sutra. And during the Soma Sutra segments, we're going to be talking about the domains and relationships. And if we're feeling particularly saucy, we might even talk a little bit about sexuality. So it's Eco Week. Let's talk about some eco dating, shall we? Since I am also eco, I've had a lot of hands-on experience in the eco dating world. And eco is like a real dynamic, no-rules environment. If they're in a very boring environment, they might make some choices that are maybe not the best choices to make, but it will make the environment a little bit more active and interesting. So, what happens when an eco is dating? Well, sometimes they don't make the best choices in partners. So you can ask my parents, they will attest to this. I brought home a lot of idiots, and there was a lot of fighting going on in the house about that all the time. Now, they knew that the person was an idiot, and I knew the person was an idiot, but being eco, I didn't care. It was filling that need for me. Ecos and some of the other domains are susceptible to a disorder that I like to call AMS, or asshole magnet syndrome. If you continue to date the same type of person over and over again, and you are in that type of relationship, then you need to stop. Look at yourself, see what's going on inside of you, why you are having this magnetic draw to these people so that they are coming into your life. You need to address it and then start dating again after you address that. The healthier you are emotionally, the healthier the type of person you will attract to you is. So, ecos are empaths, and sometimes we want to date the hurt puppy dogs or some other people that need us. Okay, that's really nice. It's nice to help other people. Don't date the people that you need to help. So I decided that I would become a psychologist, and then I could help all the people I wanted to help in the office. While I was dating, however, I dated healthier people. I dated more appropriate people and had a good time doing it. So, what do we do? Okay, examine. Are we dating the same type of person over and over again? If so, do we need to look inside and change a few things to bring more healthy people to us? And recognizing that pattern is absolutely imperative to getting rid of the asshole magnet. So, that's our Soma Sutra for the week. We will see you next week for our next segment.
Wow.
There it is.
I need something alcoholic. All right, I think our guest is there. We can take whatever you just said, all that, and again, if you're listening to it for the first time, as I just did, I'm just staring at my phone going, what?
Right. Let me get the horn.
Let's punch up our guest here.
Here's the horn.
Very nice.
Okay.
You like that, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, joining us now from coherence.com is, I'm not sure what your background is title-wise, but your name is Stephen Elliott. And let's get right to it. You have a definitive method to access coherence through breathing, a new science of breath. So why don't we get into how you spelunked and got all this stuff. What's your background?
My background is sort of 30 to 40 years as an engineer and system designer. And the other 40 hours a week, I've spent my time investigating esoterica, breathing, chi, martial arts, yoga, meditation, trying to understand what makes all that work.
Otherwise known as the woo, as we call it here.
That's
but,
right.
Okay.
There you go.
I love that name, esoteric, because then, of course, then the real science, you know, the moo part is exoteria, you know, all the obvious stuff.
Getting it out in the open.
Puts a fork in it. So where did you start? As an engineer, I would imagine you looked at it, you know, with the mindset that, you know, there's got to be a lever here somewhere. There's got to be a way in. And, you know, almost every contemplative discipline out there, from yoga to meditation, all the ones you just named, begins with bringing attention to the breath. Is that kind of where you got physically started with this, or how did you kind of, like, you know, take step one?
Well, step one for me was yoga and martial arts back in my late teens and early 20s. And I've always sort of needed to be doing something like that my whole life. And took it seriously. You know, it wasn't just a hobby.
Yeah.
And as soon as I could afford my own biofeedback gear, I invested in that and began to try to put some quantitative analysis, if you will, to what I was experiencing. And I guess in the late 90s, I began to connect some dots that, to my knowledge, had not been connected before. And when I looked around, that seemed to be the case. So I began to try to connect these dots, and I believe I've done that. By that, I think we now see a clear pattern emerging, one having to do with the autonomic nervous system, which underlies virtually everything that we do, physical and mental. And we can observe the clear effects of breathing on autonomic status via numerous measures.
Sure, and again, one of the things, I mean, for people that have a perception of the nervous system, you know, from the old game Operation, where they just put the little thing in and, you know, is that the wiring, the physical wiring part is sort of one side of it, but there's an energetic side of the nervous system, too, that perceives, you know, basically or processes information in and around the body, in the field around the body. And the autonomic system is part and parcel to that. One of the things in the mid-90s that I stumbled upon is all those hippies out there in Boulder Creek in California for HeartMath that were investigating the role that the heart played in regulating or interacting with the autonomic nervous system, this whole idea of a cardiac brain and the autonomic system. Could you give people kind of a synopsis of that, like how you probably stumbled upon it too.
I have. I'm quite familiar with HeartMath, and in fact, I sell their product in my small business. That is their
the freeze framer
now M-Wave PC.
That's right.
HeartMath. HeartMath promotes something different than I promote. They're, if I can paraphrase, all about sort of heart-centric feelings and positive emotions, and I'm about breathing. By that, I propose that the heart rate variability cycle is really an outcome of autonomic nervous system governance of something called the respiratory arterial pressure wave.
Okay.
And this wave is created through breathing. It's really quite surprising.
So breath causes this wave in the autonomic system. So and breath being regulated by the brain, I'm assuming, you know. So we got a little conversation going on here between the heart, lungs, and brain. Sounds like the triune of life. The chiropractic.
Yeah, here's surprisingly what happens, yeah. Dr. Mark, and and this has been known for quite some time, but it isn't widely recognized. And this is really sort of quite surprising. In the new book we've just finished, Coherent Breathing: The Definitive Method, we cite some very good research that was done in the mid-1900s by, you know, serious investigators before money was warping the outcome. And these things were known then. But the bottom line is this, that when we inhale deeply, we create a negative pressure in the thoracic cavity of the body. In other words, a low blood pressure zone in the body. And what happens when we have a low pressure zone in the atmosphere? Air flows from high pressure to low pressure. And the very same thing happens in the body, that is, blood flows from the extremities through the right side of the heart into the lungs and thoracic cavity.
Okay.
And this is quite a large volume. It's somewhere around 400 to 500 milliliters of extra blood flows in when we inhale deeply. and the lungs swell up much like a water balloon. That is, one side of the lungs is about blood, the other side is about air, and they meet across the very thin alveolar surface. So when we inhale deeply, the lungs swell up effectively like a water balloon, and when we exhale properly, that water balloon ejects all that blood through the left side of the heart into the arterial tree and out to the extremities again. So, in other words, there's this wave action that is set up every time we inhale and exhale, and the autonomic nervous system responds to that wave by producing the heart rate variability cycle.
And this is something that you can regulate voluntarily by regulating your breathing. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, what I teach and what my products promote is how to do this, and it's astoundingly simple and at the same time quite complex, which is why it's taken thousands of years to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that is that there is an optimal breathing frequency for the adult. I cite that frequency at being right at 5 breaths per minute. And as long as we breathe at that rhythm with regularity and appropriate depth, it sets up this wave action.
That's one breath every 12 seconds, roughly.
That's right. As long as we're breathing coherently throughout the day, the wave action continues,
mm-hmm.
and the autonomic nervous system responds to this wave
mm-hmm.
as though it prefers it,
mm-hmm.
and the entire body relaxes, including the heart. Now, imagine for a moment what the heart's doing. When we inhale, the heart speeds up, and that is to usher venous blood into the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
When we exhale, the heart slows down, but pumps with greater capacity and strength, pushing this wave of blood from the lungs through the left side of the heart into the aorta.
Mm.
And I conjecture that breathing properly offloads the heart of its responsibility for generating and sustaining blood pressure, where otherwise, that and the cardiovascular system have to do it 100% of the time.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm one of my questions right now is how much offloading of the heart breathing actually does. But the diaphragm, as you know, is a large, thick muscle
mm-hmm.
that can apply a lot of a lot of force.
Well, there's a lot of literature out there, even in the somatic side of it, that talks about the electrophysiological aspect of it, where if people have aberrant posture and their breathing is altered, either right, left, front, or back, the diaphragm acts like a shock absorber, and what will happen is it'll alter the way that the heart sits on it, and the heart's very sensitive to that angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think the number's 57 degrees. It has to lay on top of the diaphragm, and when the heart doesn't have that good toehold on the diaphragm, it starts hypertrophy, and you start getting these aberrant circulation patterns that result in degenerative conditions later on. But so there's a lot of like cardioballistics, which is one of those things that I kind of interloped through that field a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a thing that they lay in your chest, and it would track the movement of your chest cavity as you would breathe. This create a ballistic cardiogram look like.
Yes.
And like the flight of the bumblebee, the thing, and they used to do it for people that would like parachuters and people that for the army jumping out of planes and stuff like that, to see how their heart dealt with the pressure and things, and if they could recover, and also for people that had issues with a lot of flight travel for jet lag,
mm-hmm.
and so in my clinical side of it, chiropractic side of it, back in the 90s when I was sitting there table ratting around. Was that the thoracic curve is your primary curve. The baby curve is a C curve.
Mm-hmm.
And when people lose capacity in their spine, they'll go back to that C curve. They'll lose the S curve in their neck and low back, and it'll affect the cardioballistics. I was measuring this and looking at the cardioballistics of it as I was measuring the heart rate variability with the freeze framer.
Yeah.
So
I have a theory, Mark, about chiropractic and breathing as well.
Oh, wow.
That is,
okay, lay it on me.
One of the things that happens when we breathe correctly, that is coherently, all the muscles in the body relax, and that
mm-hmm.
includes the small muscle motor units, principally those along the spinal column. So a lot of the tension and locking up that results in spinal pressure and pressure on the discs and nerves, I believe is fundamentally a consequence of suboptimal breathing.
Well,
I can measure electromyographic response immediately, changes in it immediately with proper breathing.
Well, I have to ask you a musical question then. Have you been to Boulder? Because up in Boulder in Colorado, the research from Longmont in the network circles is about this whole thing called the somatopsychic respiratory wave, which is, you know, gobbledygook for basically when somebody goes through a tension release in their spinal column, it's a body to brain induced wave where the body will relax, and then the paraspinal tension will drop, and there's a soliton wave that goes up the cord in a kind of harmonic sinusoidal pattern, and it'll kind of wash clean all of those these little portals they call spinal gateways.
Subluxations, in your terminology, I guess.
Yeah, and what'll happen is that these biological oscillators will then kind of reset everything, reset the pin, so to speak, so the tension can go through the system from head to toe, and back down into the ground. So it's almost like you're saying that if you're breathing in for 6 seconds and breathing out for 6 seconds rhythmically for a minute, and this is something that the M-Wave coaches you through and as a pattern, and I'm sure your system does something similar to kind of cue somebody in, because it's hard for people, and I've done it, you know, sitting there real time on the freeze frame here. People seem to be able to focus on the breath in or the breath out. It's hard to get them to focus on both.
Well, in the
beginning.
Yeah, I have very simple products, and that really is my mainstay, is extremely simple products and information in the way of books and instructions that lead one to do this very simply. And the vast majority of people that we see clinically and outside of a clinical setting, within 5-10 minutes, they're getting it, and their heart rate variability amplitude will go from sometimes 3 to 4 beats up to 20 to 30 beats instantly. This is not unusual, and that is what I and Dee Edmondson and I, who's sort of my co-researcher and author, prescribe, is that we should work toward getting our heart rate variability amplitude into the 20 to 30 beats range with coherence. But amplitude, I believe, is more important than coherence, because if you don't get amplitude, you really can't have the blood wave, and you can't have autonomic balance.
And the amplitude results from having the symmetry of the breath in and breath out, or from just the duration, or is it actually a depth of the breathing, or...
Yeah, the amplitude, I theorize and describe thoroughly in the new book, that the amplitude of the heart rate variability cycle is a function of the amplitude or magnitude of the respiratory arterial pressure wave. In other words, the blood that's rising and falling in the arterial tree as a function of breathing. So what happens is as the blood volume increases in the aorta, the autonomic nervous system will facilitate that flow. And to avoid increasing blood pressure, that is, raising blood pressure too high, the heart rate will drop. And as we inhale, in order to prevent the blood pressure from falling too low, the heart rate will speed up. So I believe the heart rate variability cycle is a secondary effect of the autonomic nervous system governing this phenomenon called the respiratory arterial pressure wave.
And then you've relayed this to Roland McCready and his buddies out there, or you're just sort of like you're putting your 2 cents in alongside what they're saying, because they have more of an emotional, like you say, that there's a psychophysiological aspect of it too that influences this as well, and if you want to go all around the horn, I don't know if you definitely stumbled upon Dan Winter's work doing this for 5 minutes, which gets into the geometry of this as far as the way these things, the voltage drop in the heart and all that stuff as a function of awareness and attention. So what do you think is really, you're saying it's much more, it sounds like your mindset is more that this is much more about, fluid dynamics and regulation of a sort of a mechanical thing than it is a physiological phenomenon.
It is definitely a physiological phenomenon.
Okay.
I'm aware, very aware of HeartMath, and they're very aware of me. And I am aware of Dan Winter. He's aware of me. I have a different perspective than either of them.
Very different mindset. The first time I've heard this be, like, I've heard this stuff mentioned, but usually only in the pathophysiological side of the coin.
Well, I've, to be honest, I've never heard anyone espouse my theories on the subject. So
just the cardioballistic stuff and the, and the things you're talking about. See, I've always said this, and this is something that gets me in trouble in the chiropractic circles, is that the subluxation begins in the breath, not in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, I got in trouble for that. And the other thing I said was, unless the person has their attention inside their breath, their system will begin to buckle, because basically it loses its supply, it loses its combustible fuel, which is the breath. So it, to me, it was like, it's almost like a recharging thing. And I don't know if you're familiar with holotropic breathing. You're familiar with that?
I am. In fact, a recharging thing. I can show you graphs and charts and whatnot that actually demonstrate the bioenergy in the human body during coherent breathing, and there's a definite rise.
Wow.
I know how to measure these things, and these graphs are in book one, that is The New Science of Breath.
Okay.
And
well,
a lot more graphs are in book two.
Since we're going that direction here, let's bring in Professor Val on this, because on the psychology side, you know, when you see someone going through any type of memory recall, and they get sort of this intrusive reliving, somatic recall, whatever.
Yeah.
Their breath they'll begin to hyperventilate.
Yeah.
As the memory comes up. So, Val, just as something you've observed this, you know, directly, indirectly, even doing energy work with Reiki, how do you handle that situation on a psychological side when someone basically kind of loses it on the breathing side? Is that a marker for you that you're getting to someplace good, deep, what?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Mm-hmm. You've triggered something nasty. And then the first thing that I usually do with them is to get them breathing properly again, because what else can you do? You have to get them back to, you know, a homeostasis before you can work any of the stuff out. But they definitely lose it. First place, you know, you can see them fidgeting and then, you know, moving around and the hands, and then it's the breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the early articles I wrote was Swimming Without the Water, which was, God, that was horrible. Which was, as you watch somebody's gait, you know, as they're walking, and I used to take people on these little walks and put colored glasses on them and walk all over the neighborhood, and I would monitor their breathing and their walking, where they were babbling on about whatever their problem was. I'd say it was a walking adjustment, was what I said to them. And, you know, it was more this figure eight motion through the lung field that I was looking for. There was the shoulder and the rib cage on the opposite side, sort of going into this little seesaw, and then I knew that the heart and lungs were kind of having a good little conversation in there, and that the brain would eventually join in, and the whole band would play.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back, put them on the table, remove gravity, and see if they can repeat it, because then they were going to either sleep themselves back into the pattern or be able to actually internalize it. So it's another one of these things where it's so damn obvious, it's so right in front of you.
That's right.
And it's such a mesoscopic phenomenon. Everyone sees it. It doesn't have to be put on some, you know, to analyze and stuff like that. That anyone could learn to do this without a lot of technical equipment.
That's exactly right. And I promote it, and I would say 90% of my customers, which is about 10,000 now, use a CD, one track on a CD, to learn how to do this. And usually in a clinical setting where we can observe them, one session is all it takes for them to learn this.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they usually we try to have them experience what it's like. I don't mean what the breathing is like, but what it feels like after you breathe this way for 8 to 10 minutes. You know, it's a whole different world, and after they touch that, they want to come back. So they get it. And,
yeah, it's one of those things, like I said, you can talk about the roller coaster and put them on it, and once they get that clarity, especially when it goes and internalizes itself, because it has a way of entraining other systems, and it's almost like you're making contact. It's like some of my thesis work with conscious ear and some of these other fields that I was working for a while with Irving Dardick's work, which is another one I think you probably piggybacked into, looking at interval training and the way he called it cardiocybernetics, which would actually deal with stopping the breath, ischemically stopping the breath, like holding the breath, and then letting the breath come out naturally to resynchronize things for training for recovery with athletes, because people train for exertion and not recovery, and that would screw up the amplitude of the wave as well.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things, all these breathing pattern things, are things that people do all day long. They just don't know it. They breathe different when they're driving, when they're watching a movie, and it's almost like it's like the kid trying to search for the, you know, like accidentally dials, you know, the Santa Claus at the phone number. It's like they're just tapping all over the keypad, hoping they get a coherent pattern. When you know, if they learn the simple principle of 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, do that for a minute, you know, and this is something that they can actually master without a lot of work. And this, you know, we teach a thing called simples in our work that basically has them do it during different times of the day, during different parts of the lunar cycle, so that they can actually get a biological boost as well as a physiological boost. And then, like I said, then when they're hit with an event, emotional event or a memory or something like that, they can absorb it rather than kind of like go back into it and deepen that pattern. And this is something like, you know, breath really starts to me the perception of security.
Yeah, I have a large number of clients who use this for anxiety, and I've had the good fortune to get to speak to a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them have panic-related issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, you know, how they use breathing to deal with their fears.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, what I counsel is that, you know, after you learn to do this and you feel pretty good and you approach your fearful scenario, whether it's the boss at work or whether it's crossing a bridge or whether it's doing something, that you work on making sure that your breathing remains stable.
Mm-hmm.
That is, your body will want to speed up the breath. We work gently to encourage the opposite, and the body will want to tense up. We, work gently to encourage the opposite, and they find that in a matter of a few days or weeks, they're able to overcome that. So they can completely mitigate or avoid the response in the longer term. And I think a lot of it is because the response began probably as an outcome of some suboptimal psychophysiological state, probably induced by improper breathing to start with.
Yeah, we've touched on it. I mean, Doyle Henderson's work with the somatic memory touches on this. And this is another thing that Value might be privy to a little bit, is that the dyadic regulation, like when you're in conversation with someone trying to get, you know, rapport, the NLP model of rapport, you breathe with someone, you get in sync with somebody. This affects the way that the relationship's going to exchange energetically, as well as, you know, on the level that you feel consciously.
Yeah.
And I know it affects relationships, especially Dan Goldman's work with social intelligence, that when people are arguing, that there's a flooding that goes on, with physiological flooding, with the pooling of blood, basically. And this is, I love this acupuncture term, the chung mo, the sea of blood right over there by the solar plexus. And I guess what you're saying is that the vagus nerve sort of has the, like, almost like the dummy switch on this to protect the heart from the panic that's around it. And it sort of has almost like a fail-safe around it, where it won't let that that tension or that asymmetry get into the heart rhythm. And once it does, of course, it cascades through the rest of the body. So just wanted to get Val's impression of that. When you're dealing with couples that are having disharmony in their relationship, could you just simply point out that like we had the tantric guest a while ago, that if they just basically practiced breathing in rhythm to each other before they even had a conversation, you know, have you ever seen that aspect of the relationship, like when someone, like, especially when it's a long-standing thing, one person has asthma, one person has sleep apnea, you know that this thing has been kind of sharing the same brain for a while. So, Val, do you have that sort of like in the back of your mind that you could picture couple after couple, you know, and you look at them and one person's breathing in, one person's breathing out, or when one person's talking, the other person's not in sync with them?
Now, you know what? I've never gone there.
Okay.
I'm usually ducking when people are in my office.
Well, how are you breathing? See, that's the other thing, is that I don't know if you've gotten into the meridian work with this at all, where you teach
sure
them to roll the tongue in the roof of the mouth and the microcosmic orbit and all that. So that's
sure have. In fact, in page 27 of the new book is our new interpretation of the Yellow Emperor's classic on internal Chinese medicine.
Oh, God.
There's a quote from Book 18. 18 is titled The Treatise on the Manifestations of Health in Man. If you'd like, I'll read it to you.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
The way the Yellow Emperor's classic is designed, it's sort of question and answer, where the Yellow Emperor, Huang Ti, asks his primary pupil, Qi Po, questions, and Qi Po responds. And the Yellow Emperor asks, what constitutes a healthy person? And Qi Po answers, inhalation and exhalation determine the beat of the pulse. Man has one pulse beat to one measure of exhalation, which repeats. Man has one pulse beat to one measure of inhalation, which repeats. When there are five pulse beats to one complete exhalation or inhalation, it means that there is one extra measure inserted, bringing about a deep breath of what is called a healthy and well-balanced person. And finally, a healthy and well-balanced person is not affected by disease. Now, it turns out that 5 pulses per inhalation or exhalation is 7 breaths per minute. Elsewhere in the Yellow Emperor's Classic, they make clear that the acupuncturist, which is also sort of marginally known out there, that the acupuncturist practitioner should be breathing at 4 breaths per minute, or sorry, 4 pulse beats per minute, and should be gauging the breathing pattern of their client accordingly.
So does this jive with your research, or is it one or two breaths off, or the same neighborhood, or...
I promote 5.
You're saying 5. I know HeartBand, I think, says 6.
The traditional understanding of resonance is 6.
Okay. And they get their math how? How do they figure that out? Because there will be one breath every 10 seconds?
If you take a very broad study of the of the spectral analysis of the heart rate variability cycle across many people, there's a peak. There's a natural peak that occurs at 0.1 hertz.
Right.
And I believe historically people have seized on that 0.1, that peak as the sort of nominal frequency of resonance. But
okay.
I believe resonance has a lot to do with the state of autonomic balance and with cardiopulmonary relaxation, which I believe brings it down to more like 0.085.
Okay.
Or
so
5
like,
breaths per minute.
Sort of like the drunk driving rules in California, just a little lower than the 0.1 that everybody else
That's
has.
That's right. That's right. And I've gotten a lot of feedback, Dr. Mark, about the efficacy of 5 breaths versus 6 in a clinical setting. And universally, everyone tells me that 5 is much more effective to bring someone back from sort of a sympathetic bias state than 6 is.
Huh.
And I believe it as well. I see the same thing working with people.
Okay, well, and again, the numbers get confused in my head. So if you're doing 5 breaths in a minute, that's 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out.
That's correct.
And if you're doing the other way around, then you're doing 5. Oh, wow, okay, I would see where that would get confusing. And really, 1 second makes that much of a difference physiologically, because there is sort of a code in there.
Yeah, in the books, I show a very compelling, I think, graph that shows a person breathing at 5 breaths per minute, and their heart rate variability cycle is about 36 beats in amplitude, and then they increase that to 7.5, so 2.5 breaths higher, and the heart rate variability amplitude falls by about 22 beats.
Hmm.
So just 1 breath per minute will drop the amplitude substantially by a third. 2 breaths per minute, by two-thirds. So it makes a huge difference. This is about resonance, and resonance is sort of a fragile thing. When you're very close to it, then you're on. But when you start to wander off, even by a breath a minute or so, it makes a big difference.
And what's actually hilarious about the entire thing is that in the Open Up guidance or any other physiology book or even any exercise text, 16 to 20 is what physiological norm is.
That's right. I say 17 to 19 in my work.
Mm-hmm.
That is the current accepted norm. Used to be 15, now 17 to 19.
And that would be a recipe for decoherence and all kinds of fun stuff.
That's a recipe for sympathetic bias.
Yeah, okay, right, and which is an overexertion culture, which we don't understand recovery or relaxation. We understand collapse.
Yep.
And so basically we're breathing ourselves into a fragile state, and then basically we exhaust ourselves, and that's why I really look at a lot of the people. They say it's a sedentary culture. I think it's an exhausted culture.
Well, we are sedentary, but at the same time, we're breathing way too fast.
where does that take place? We're hyperventilating and putting a whole bunch of sugar in the bloodstream before they're even 10 years old. The lungs basically I went through this with my son. He had operations and stuff, and he had heart operations early on, and he ended up with the chylo thorax and all kinds of fun things. His chest is like a jigsaw puzzle. But going through it, 6 years old is when you peak in synaptic potential, and the lung fields actually fill in and get sort of, I guess, leverage over the heart at that point. And one of the things that we learned from the pulmonologist at that stage of the game with my son was that this is when he actually can start really holding his breath to the point where his body can actually let him know when he can release the breath. And so before that, we had to, like, wait till he fell asleep and, like, pinch his nose and let him kind of stir and things like that. when you see people losing it on the sleep side, when they're actually, because you see a lot of asthmatic patterns, not asthma, but asthmatic patterns with these kids out there in the soccer fields and stuff like that. When would you start looking for things showing up on the sleep side when you see breathing patterns there that are basically looking like you said exertion dominant, sympathetic dominant?
Well, I would say 20% of my customers probably use coherent breathing for sleep efficacy, including me. And it's also used by a major sleep lab in the Northeast, that is in a hospital in the Northeast, for the very same reason. And I believe, Mark, and I really don't have good solid scientific evidence that this is so, but I know that suboptimal breathing during the day results in dysautonomia during the day. And I think it's very likely that training dysautonomia during the day rolls over into the nighttime.
Hmm.
What I can't say is that correcting the autonomic behavior during the day via breathing will facilitate a change in autonomic behavior at night, apnea being an example.
Hmm.
But I do have some customers that are trying that right now, so hopefully I'll get some feedback before too long.
Yeah, well, there's definitely from the holotropic work and some of the other ones that there definitely is a mapping, but they are independent. They're not United States of physiology, but they are complementary in the sense that you have day residue that will affect dream cycle, things like that. And we work along with the lunar cycles that you're going to have a different physiological intensity as you get up to a full moon and then coming down the scale, going to the new moon. So there's definitely an activity, rest activity thing, interlocking into that, ultradian rhythms, and go on and on. This would have been a good show for Brother Jeb, eh?
Yeah.
One thing that is known, Mark, is that the heart is always trying to synchronize with the breathing, except during REM.
Right.
Yes. 23 and a half hours a day, the heart is trying to synchronize with the breath.
Mm-hmm.
Except
yeah,
when we go into REM, and then all synchrony is lost.
And most of us we're REM deprived because of our sleep problems. So
and we're breathing so fast and irregularly that the heart can't really ever synchronize with the breath. So we're walking around in a state of incoherence.
Wow.
I should take you both to karate class with me because, boy, let me tell you about breathing. It takes me forever to recover from anything we're doing there. It's pretty brutal.
Mm.
Well, again, this is another one of the things about the attention part with martial arts is that before you even get into a combat, type of a training, and you know this from your martial arts background, there's a whole series of contemplative little foothills in the mountains that you go through to center your attention, and then by centering your attention and calming down the mind, focusing the mind, the breath seems to sort of been trained to that, and then you can go and get the coordination back. So it's like if you're not used to that, and there's a lot of intensity with martial arts, you're going to sort of overextend, and your body's going to go through these recovery cycles like she's talking about, where you really can't catch your breath because it's not just the tired from activity, it's also the mental focus, the mindfulness that it requires, that engages both sides of the coin. So you have the voluntary muscles and then the voluntary focus and then all that involuntary activity that has to sort of regulate all that. So that's why martial arts, to me, if they made that part of everyone's physical education in this country instead of kickball and dodgeball and all the other crap, and because really, I don't understand. They have liability for plastic forks, but throw the ball at someone's nose, in recess. That's fine.
You are so right.
Just everyone should be
so
doing.
Better.
If you're doing Tai Chi, you show a different martial art every year. The first part of grade school, starting with yoga, things like that, working your way through the Tai Chi stuff, and then getting into some of the other forms, and then finally getting into some of the more contact forms as the kids get older. And the coordination levels would go up, and they would actually know what it's like to be mindful of their breath, which is something that hardly anybody is.
I have a lot of theories around this, but one of them is that. One of them is that if you bring a student of any kind, adult or child, into a state of autonomic balance before exposing them to knowledge and learning, it's tantamount to lowering their shields.
Oh,
that is, if you bring the shields down, you automatically hear what goes into your ears. That is, you automatically listen and you automatically register what you see. So so learning becomes a lot more automatic.
And that academic part of the academic word, the only reason it becomes academic and you can study is because the system feels safe. And
yeah,
that neuroception part of it is big, and that's why the breathing is integral to that, sure.
The way I personally study today is that I breathe, and I read, and I read again, and I read again, and before too long, I got it. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to struggle over it. It just goes in.
Interesting.
You've removed a lot of the background noise because most people,
that's
you know,
right.
they're walking the shield, around
the shields
are
down.
I've got a ton of background noise at all times.
Well, we've kind of been around the horn here on the whole coherence farm, so just why don't you clear up the number one misconception you have about your work, and then we'll tie it down for tonight.
There are a few misconceptions about my work. I guess one of the questions that is out there is about heart rate variability itself, and that is, what is the heart rate variability phenomenon? There are a lot of ideas about it. I'm squarely in the camp that it is a fundamental, as you said earlier, a physiomechanical phenomenon. I believe that is true. That is, it's about diaphragmatic movement. It's about pressure changes in the thorax. It's about blood flow as a function of those pressure changes. And it's about, ultimately, autonomic nervous system governance of that blood flow.
Wow.
And all that said, when you do it right, you bring your entire psychophysiology, body, mind, and spirit, into a state of coherence and harmony, and there it stays for as long as you breathe correctly.
Yeah, and like I said, this stuff, it sounds really complicated, and like you need like a PhD to understand it. You don't. You just need that stuff is available to people.
The fact of the matter is, it's taken us 10,000 years to figure it out.
It's funny. It's one of these things where it's so obvious and that stuff you read out of the Emperor's book there. It basically comes down to that, and the breath of life is one of those things that I'm very attached to in terms of my work, is that getting people to understand that there's a vitalistic aspect to breathing, vitality is linked to it, your longevity is linked to it,
that's right.
your capacity,
your performance
to pay attention,
is linked to it,
empathy, all that stuff. So that's why I'm saying it's something that if you don't have a breathwork practice, you really don't have a healthy a strategy. You're sort of like compensating. So this is why I'm saying, go to coherence.com. Look up, look into Steve's work. He's been putting a lot of hours into this thing, and I got to say, you're putting it together a foundation that is something I hope will be something people will build upon for the next 100 years, so we can, not spend another 10,000 years wandering the desert looking at all the false gods.
Me too. The first science of breath was written 100 years ago, and I complemented it with a new science of breath 100 years later. So,
wow, we got to button these things up. Do more than once a century. So,
all right.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Mark. Thank you, Val.
Thank
you.
See you
soon.
Bye bye.
Come back.
Bye-bye.
That was good stuff.
Wow.
I should actually have my students that are becoming psychologists and teachers read some of that stuff and do it with their kids.
Yeah, I found his work to try to make sense of all the stuff I was doing with HeartMath, and I'm glad we had him for an hour. That was a great, lesson and
stuff.
And exo-fied. Wow. All right, well, let's punch up some somascopes, and we'll tie down the Wednesday from hell. It is 11 to 2, Braves!
Oh, God. All right, well, you take a breath, and I'll click play. Here we go.
All right.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
And it's time for Somascopes. This is a new feature. I get to actually pre-record this sucker. So where are we? We're in the middle of an eco week, which in Four Domains parlance, that is a somatic vacation. We're in recovery from that nasty full moon we had on Monday night. So if you feel a little loosey-goosey, you feel a little bit of that spring fever, feeling like you want to just kind of shuck all the routines and just go out and frolic, that would be appropriate moon physiology. And that continues right through the holiday weekend. How convenient, all the way to the last quarter moon on the 27th. So when we reconvene next week, we will be in Exoland. Starting again to get prepared for the next cycle, which begins on the 3rd. So take the week off and get outside, suck up a little nature, If you're an Onto, believe you can. If you're a Philo, do it with a friend. If you're an Eco, you're already there. You're listening to me. And if you're an XO, get from, you know, the basement to the garage. All right? This is Dr. Mark for your Somascopes. Be well.
Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Nice.
Right,
now, let me
go.
Ask you a question. How many times did you have to record that?
That'd be once.
Yeah. Well, I spent about about an hour because I kept screwing it up. It's just, God, it takes practice to be able to just, you know, get it out.
No, not if you don't care. No.
Yeah, but it was like, it was perfect. You didn't fall over words. It just, bam, it's out.
Fall over words? I'm talking to myself.
Well, I was talking to myself. Then the dog was barking, and the other phone was, I mean, it was just.
It's from years
typical.
Of being ignored. Yeah, it's from years of talking to the walls and being ignored. I'm very good at talking to myself. But to other people, I really don't want to talk to.
Yeah, I
but
hear
that
you.
Guy, Steve, was great. I mean, like I said, he made, you know, by making it so dirt simple, I wish we had Brother George on the line to pepper him with some questions. Because
well,
we
you know what? Next
the,
time we have him on, we'll bring Brother George on. We might play his little riff.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need that. We'll hit that right now just to kind of, you know, balance that or Bob Costa, so that if you're a little frustrated this week and you've had it, Brother George can sympathize.
All right,
with
here we
this.
Go. Yeah. All right, one second here. Where is he?
Can't get enough of this. This
okay, no, never. Here it goes.
Hey, Mark, I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm completely fucked. Chrome will not allow me to say anything again on my gigabytes of drive. It says empty. I'm fucked. I tried to try cutting the phone in my hands. It says I'm fucked. I'm fucked. I'm fucked. This thing is fucking me. I'm tired of being fucked. It's Harvard graphics from now on. I will never touch this piece of shit again. It has done this before. I am tired of this. It's fucking unstable. I can't handle this piece of shit anymore. I don't know what to do. I am fucked. I'm fucked further than you could possibly. It's not fucking funny tonight. I haven't got this goddamn thing done all goddamn day. Because I can't see anything on a goddamn fucking dick. Anyway, I have no idea if we even have a talk tomorrow. Goodbye.
There you go.
Every time I hear it, I laugh. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good.
All right, well, now here on Naked Summer, we have our pulse on the culture, so we're going to go live to the American Idol finish here, just to see what's going on. Play it out with this, since everyone else is watching it.
The finale when it's anything but a final. It's the beginning of the start of the destiny of your career. I'm so proud. And just remember, sometimes we think it's all about winning, but it's the things sometimes that we lose that reminds us of how truly special we are as people. Keep it up.
Priceless. Yeah, Simon, look at that. Like an alligator he looks.
What's his domain?
Do you wonder?
Because I thought on the night it was a terrific show. I went back home to watch it. Wasn't quite the clear cut as we called it. And in fact, David, I will take this opportunity to apologize because I think I was verging on disrespectful with you. And I don't think you deserve that. Because over the season, both of you, what I like about both of you is that you're triers. And you've both given it your best. You're both very nice people. And for the first time ever, I don't really care who wins. I think you've both done terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's as close to an Onto apology as you're going to get.
Uh-huh.
I'm very sorry. Not really.
God.
Oh, here comes the freaking envelope.
All right.
The fate of the free world depends on this. Are we almost
we
up the air?
No. Nope.
All right, here we go.
The telescope has certified the vote results contained in this envelope and would like to once again congratulate American Idol Season 7 on smashing another world record.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all of you. Thank you, everyone.
Great, American Idol with a British accent. Tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 97 million votes.
We really enjoyed both of you. Best of luck to both of you, David, okay?
These two half of fags. All right, let's see what happens here.
We've got 30 seconds.
Here we go, America.
I want my pants.
David and David, the winner
by 12 million votes of American Idol 2008 is David Cook.
That'd be the taller David.
We just made it.
Yeah?
We just made it, yeah.
We're off the air?
Yeah, well, yeah, except for our lurkers who never come and listen live. Hello,
right,
lurkers.
Well,
listen live, will you? God's sakes.
Well, there you go. Travel light. We're all free now to to look.
What was that pregnant pause that I was so glad you didn't finish?
Yeah, exactly. Have a good week. See you next week for a very special Naked Soma as we tear down the internet with Richard Jorgensen.
There you
Travel go. Travel lighter with Now or American Idol. Bye-bye.
Bye.